Welcome to the special Dream Emmy-themed edition of the TV Line podcast. I'm Michael Osiello. Over the coming weeks, we'll be sitting down with actors and producers we believe deserve to be recognized at this year's Emmy Awards. Included in that list, of course, is actress, producer, writer, and comedian Julie Klausner, who is the creator and star of Hulu's hilariously acerbic Difficult People. Julie, welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure, thanks for being here. So we were talking a little bit about how you are just wrapping season three now. We're talking about season two, but you just are nearing the end of season three.
Yes, we have two more weeks of production, and then we're going to start editing it together.
And your schedule is sort of nuts compared to a typical, I guess, TV schedule. It's not typical by any means.
We have one director, Jeffrey Walker, who's an EP on the show and who's the most wonderful, sweet man to deal with all of us and to kind of keep all these balls in the air, because what we do is we cross shoot all 10 episodes at once. So we will be shooting, you know, scenes from like 6 different episodes on a given day. We lay it out according to cast availability, locations. It's a Rubik's Cube of a lot of different variables, but to do as much as we do in as short of a time and on the budget that we do it, it has sort of become our normal. So yeah, we've been doing that every season.
And how long do you have to shoot 10 episodes in?
About 2.5 months.
Okay. And usually, what do you think it would be, the typical?
Oh, gosh, I have no idea. Well, yeah. The other thing about this, too, is that even though the schedule is a little nutty and cross-shooting is nutty and the writing of it is, you know, I don't even know if it's as much of, like, we don't have a typical, we have a writer's room, but then Scott King, who's my co-writer and my showrunner, will do a draft and then I'll do, you know, then I'll do it, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. But really, like, we're the only ones who, like, have scripts that we actually write.
Now, let's back up tell me a little bit about how this show even came to be. Was it, I know Amy Poehler is a producer. Did you go to Amy? Did Amy come to you? What was the origin story here?
I wrote a spec script for a show that I really wanted to do more than anything. And I'd written specs before as a writer. I think I was looking more toward the, what could I sell or what might be a marketable idea, more than what I did with Difficult People, which was just sort of sitting down and writing my, you know, dream show. It was based on my life at the time, and it was based on a lot of the stories that I had told on my podcast, which I'd done, you know, very consistently once a week for years. And I had accumulated a lot of stuff that I known had either happened or that I'd observed and might be funny if it actually did happen. And I wanted to dramatize them in kind of like a Curb Your Enthusiasm way. And Louis was on the air at the time, and I really loved the idea of kind of starring in a show that, you know, wasn't, that was just like, that had a little bit of darkness to it. And I sat down and wrote this spec in hopes that, you know, I was like, there was a New York Times article coming out about my podcast, and I thought, what if, like, you know, what if this article brings me the attention where someone could say, wow, this is huge, you know, what do you really want to do more than anything? And I could just hand them a script and be like, this is what I want to do. Of course that never happened, but the article was great. I was really nice. I was really appreciative of it. Could have been a slightly better angle on the photo, but that's neither here nor there. But the great thing that came out of it is that I took that Christmas break to, you know, sit down and write this thing. So I wrote this spec, I had a conversation about it with my agents at the time, and they said, what do you want to do with it? And I said, I want to make it as a TV show. And they said, well, then you should probably think about getting a producer attached. And so I said, well, we should send it to Amy first, because I knew Amy from doing stuff at the UCB Theater, and I've always loved her and wanted to work with her, and she was just the first person that occurred to me that would be someone I'd want to, you know, work with on a TV show with. So we sent it to her. She really liked the script, and then she asked me on the phone, you know, same thing, like, what do you want to do with it? And when I said, you know, I wanted to make it into a series, she really was very instrumental in forming the pitch, sort of figuring out what the series would be. She came up with the title Difficult People. I knew that I wanted Billy to be in it and play my best friend. She helped me, develop the show sort of as a kind of more like Absolutely Fabulous, Broad City, like show based around our friendship. And we went out to pitch it with... Jimmy, stop drinking Michael's water. Go away. Sorry, my cat's trying to drink your water.
We're in Julie's apartment, by the way.
I know, we are in my apartment with my cat. Sorry, he is not afraid of you, and he's usually... Jimmy!
Cats love me, and it's
Jimmy,
a problem.
Look at that. He doesn't care.
Jimmy?
The process of pitching it was... she brought me and Billy out to... Or the three of us went around, and we kind of demonstrated the, you know, chemistry that Billy and I have together as friends. And, you know, I'd known him because I'd been writing on Billy on the Street. And then once we got a chance to make a pilot, we sort of talked further about what the show would be and changed some things. And the pilot got made for USA. And then USA's scripted... I don't know how, like, businessy you want this...
The businessy, the better.
You can edit out anything you want. Anything you want, except for my cat trying to drink your water. You can't edit that out.
I will not touch that.
Fit. We made a pilot for USA, and then their scripted comedy department dissolved. So we had this pilot. They really only gave us enough money to make a pilot presentation, mm-hmm. but we made a pilot anyway. And then we had this thing that we could take around instead of just the script. And Hulu really liked it, and they said, let's try this out. And they gave us our first season, and we made that first season. I think I wrote everything with Scott King, but I wrote all the scripts for the first season in something like 6 weeks, and that was eight episodes. Yeah, we had, like, no time, but it was also just, well, you know, is this going to happen or not? And of course it is, because, you know, we're going to let this opportunity go away, and we... wrote it in no time at all, and then shot it, and had a little bit more time for season two, and and here we are. But once we got Scott King on board for season one, then, you know, the show really kind of became what it is now. Like, we were able to figure out, you know, some of the things that work, some of the things that don't, the philosophies that we want to, you know, remain loyal to, like, just that there's two things that happen. Billy and Julie get in their own way, but at the same time, they're right about the world getting in their way too. So we wanted to be able to explore story in both of those areas. Scott and I figured out Billy's world because, you know, when I had written that spec, because it was based on my life, all the stuff from my world was very clear. My mother, my boyfriend at the time, my home life, like, it just sort of was all thought out. Billy's life had to be a little more fleshed out. And with Scott's help, we kind of gave him this work family at the cafe and sort of created these characters at the cafe that all are kind of difficult, but...
I love. Oh,
yeah, thanks.
And we
came up with the character of Matthew specifically for Cole, just like I'd written Arthur specifically for James Urbaniak. And so it was very... and Fred Armisen, who plays Billy's brother, was also an element that we figured out together. So once Scott came on board, we really started thinking more globally, as well as, like, episode to episode. You know, what's the formula? Like, how much do we need the stories to dovetail or come back? Or, you know, do we have enough of Billy? Because there's always, like, a Billy story, a Julie story, a Billy and Julie story. And then there's usually, like, a Marilyn runner and or an Arthur runner. So we, you know, have to figure that out episode to episode, balance-wise, you know, try things out, what works, what doesn't. And yeah, I think we, like, by season two, I think we figured it out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I liked season two, one, but I really loved season two.
Thanks.
I felt like the show really gelled. It was just firing on all cylinders.
The
show, you take aim, you have so many targets, and it's one of the great pleasures of the show because you are fearless in that sense. And I have to right out up front ask, what is the deal with Kevin Spacey?
That's something to ask Kevin Spacey, because I think Kevin, sometimes I wonder, does Kevin Spacey know what the deal is with Kevin Spacey? Because he's a great actor, never met him, don't know what he's like as a human being, very curious about it, clearly. And I'm really excited he's hosting the Tony Awards, and I hope there's a Bobby Darin medley. I just like sitting back and watching what he does. I think he's fascinating.
Does Kevin Spacey know this show exists?
I don't know. I haven't heard from him. You know, he could call. I'm in the book.
If you ran into him at a party, what would that be like?
I would just giggle. I would be so... First of all, like, I know that he was at the Emmys a couple years ago, and Billy was there, and he texted me. He's like, Kevin Spacey's here with a cane. He has a cane. He's on the dance floor, and he is cutting a rug. And I was like, oh my God, that sounds fantastic.
So we did a story on TV Line, just highlighting some of the your biggest targets of season 2, and it was really fun going through that. And I'm curious, are you taking a stand with when you have a target, or is it more of just going for a laugh, or is it a combination of both?
I think it's both. I mean, look, this is a show that has an agenda. It has a series of agendas. You know, one of them is a strident feminist agenda. One is in the world of, like, I don't want to depict gay men as supplementary or, you know, anything less than sexual, fully dimensional human beings that have goals exclusive of, you know, I really want my best friend to have a makeover so she can get a boyfriend. And I want to show different variations of people that are usually not represented on television, whether it's a trans character that is neither magical nor martyred nor murdered, but just kind of an asshole like everybody else, or a boyfriend character that is as, you know, sweet and understanding and patient as women have been to people, like characters that, you know, Kevin James has played over the years in sitcoms that I've grown up with.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, our jokes on the show have to have a point of view, or, you know, they also are just, like, they can be silly. Like, listen, nothing makes me laugh more than Cole falling off of a, you know, bar stool on the show and, like, crashing to the ground. Like, that's, you know, just that there's no agenda. That's extremely fun to watch. But yeah, when we take target, when we take aim, I think that there's always going to be a truth there. And then the question is, you know, what's my point of view on it, and then what would the character's point of view on it be? And generally, you know, my character on the show is a little dumb, and she is very reluctant to take any responsibility for anything. So knowing that gives me a little bit more elasticity in getting her to, you know, just fire targets senselessly, or fire at targets senselessly on the show. But at the same time, you know, Julie, as a writer, like, has stuff to say that I can use these characters to comment on. And that's very fun and exciting, too.
Have you heard from anyone that you, you know, sort of lashed out at?
Yeah. I mean, mostly, and obviously this is, you know, I don't want to jinx it, but, like, people are generally flattered, like, when they're referenced. If only because sometimes our references are so obscure that people are like, oh my God, like, no, I can be roasted. Like, this is heaven. It's not, you know, just John Travolta. Like, so that's always, that's kind of nice. But, as far as, like, feedback in terms of, like, well, you certainly won't, there's no place for you here at NBC. Like, there's nothing that hasn't happened yet. Yeah. Although maybe the punishment is just in not calling.
Yeah.
So maybe there are consequences that I haven't yet, you know, reaped the consequences of. But at the same time, it's like no one knows who I am to begin with. So it's like, if they know who I am and they're, like, pissed off, at least they know who I really am.
Yeah.
And as by way of introduction, there's probably something to that, which is like, well, you know what? At least you know that I'm honest, so that when I do like something, you know that I really do like it. Or just that I'm not looking to please everybody, and, you know, I think that there's something nice about the show that does let people be cranky and negative. I think there was a big boom of, like, positivity and manifesting, like, you know, harmony that doesn't necessarily jibe with my favorite kinds of comedy. You know, and I think that certainly between the political climate having changed and there being a broader range of options that people can find and watch and enjoy, I think we have a lot more freedom with that.
You also, you know, slip in commentary about television itself, a lot of references to Netflix. Mm-hmm. In season two, there was a reference to a show called Horse, which hilarious, which I feel like was transparent. The show, I feel like it was like sort of like the show Transparent, even though that's not on Netflix. But just the commentary being that there are these comedies on TV that are actually dramas that you have to compete with. And I'm curious, what do you think about that? Like a show like Transparent, the sort of the more serious dramas, and then you have Difficult People, which is a flat out comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there should be a separate categories for something like that?
I'm in favor of anything that will get me an award, first of all. Let me put that out there. Second of all, I saw the first season of Transparent. I watched it in a week and I thought it was brilliant. I like Orange is the New Black too. I think Genji's brilliant. Horse was like a combination of a bunch of different things too. We poked fun at, you know, there's a lot of stuff on Showtime, too, at the time where it was, like, just a woman on the poster, and you're like, what is she, like, the Nurse Jackie, which is like, well, she's a drug addict, but it's just so that she can help people, or just, there's a specific premise that we'd seen in more than one place, so it wasn't just like, oh, yeah, we're gonna go after this specific thing. It was kind of more commenting on the trend, and hopefully poking more fun at the people that give money to productions and award them more than the actual creators, because, you know, I'm friends with Jill Soloway and Genji Kohan, and like I have, you know, nothing but love for like fellow female creators. I think that our characters on the show are way more cynical and nasty. And that's kind of fun to be able to write for people like that.
And is Hulu ever like, you know what, maybe a few less Netflix references here?
They love it. Hulu's been amazing. And again, this is my first TV show, so I don't know what to compare it to, except for the fact that I think that we're so lucky in having a network that is, they never give us notes about, like, you know, don't pick on this person. Like, it's, first of all, we get very few notes to begin with, and then the notes that we do get are either, like, logistical, like, you know, when Julie says this, we need to make sure that she, you know, she didn't meet Billy before college. Like, just things that are, like, logical. Like, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Thank you. That's helpful. Or else they are, you know, suggestions. But they're very good at trusting us and trusting Amy. Like, and Poehler gives the majority of the notes. Like, she's very instrumental throughout every step of the...
So she's hands-on. She's just not like a figurehead.
So hands-on. Hands-on in terms of casting, in terms of speaking through, you know, the scripts. The episodes go through, you know, as people know, like, you know, so many different steps, whether it's like we brainstorm on story areas, and then if Amy and everybody's happy with those, then we write an outline, and then Amy weighs in on the outline. And then after the outline, we send it to Hulu, and then we go from outline to script, and then there's different drafts of every script, and she weighs in on absolutely all of them, comes to set, weighs in on every cut once we're in edit, weighs in on, like, the ad-related stuff once we're in promotion.
Wow.
So, yeah, she is incredibly hands-on. She's a very, very creative producer. By no means is she someone that's like, yeah, I have my name on it, but I'm on to the next thing. She's very invested in Difficult People being the show that it should be and can be, and we're lucky to have her involvement, because I've never gotten a note from Amy Poehler that I wasn't happy to have gotten. You know, it's not like we take every single one of her notes, but they always lead to a conversation. They're always, you know, a challenge to think about an area that could improve upon it, or you know, sort of inspire us to revisit it. She's really smart and sweet and funny and pretty, so fuck her.
The show is packed with celebrity cameos. It would not be unusual for Amy Poehler to show up in a scene, either playing herself or someone else, yet that has not happened yet.
No,
why?
It hasn't happened yet.
What?
Well, that's all I'll say. It hasn't happened yet.
Season 3?
Season 3's got more things in it than... I mean, I'm so excited about Season 3. And that's I love Season 2, and I know that this is a podcast about Season 2.
We can talk a little bit about Season 3.
No, I mean, it's going to blow your mind. And Season 2, I was so proud of. And it's like every season is like a different child that I'm just like, I can't believe they're going to college. And so, yeah. We have great celebrity cameos. We have great combination, I think, of people playing themselves and playing characters. And we also are... I'm just delighted that we have a show in which we can use people that you're not used to seeing on every other show. You know, I think that, like... comedy's clicky. I feel like I've got a little click to some extent, but I also identify as an outsider in a lot of ways. So, you know, I feel very lucky that I'm able to kind of curate people and have them show up in roles that are surprising. And we definitely had our share of that in Season 2. And Nathan Lane was an amazing sport to be able to consent to being killed. So there's no Nathan Lane in the world of Season 3. He's passed on.
But it sounds like there's an Amy Poehler. I'm just going to say...
I can't say anything for sure.
I'm just going to say, body language, if you could see it now, this is a podcast, but trust me, I think there's going to be an Amy Poehler sighting. I love the Julie-Arthur relationship in this show. Everybody is so dysfunctional, and the relationships in so many ways are not the healthiest. That is a healthy relationship. One of the healthier... relationships on television. Talk to me about the decision to make that so normal and healthy versus the craziness that ensues elsewhere.
That's so interesting that you think it's healthy, because I know a lot of people who, you know, sort of think of him as this perpetually bullied, you know, shit-eating cuck. And I love Arthur, and I love our relationship on the show because... it is, maybe it's not healthy, but it's functional. I think both of us get what we need out of that relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, we're always sure to remind the audience that we have good sex, that we have a sex life that I think accounts for a lot. Whenever people are like, why are they still together? She's so mean to him. It's like, they have good sex, and that's sometimes enough. A lot of times it's enough. But at the same time, you know, my goals with Arthur... were to, you know, I think he's incredibly likable. I think that the straight male characters on the show tend to be like the sweetest guys in the world, and their female partners, whether it's me or Gabourey's character, are so mean to them, and yet they love it. I'm sure there's like some fantasy going on there. Definitely a good antidote to Handmaid's Tale if you ever want to watch our show as a chaser.
Oh my god,
extremely refreshing. Yeah, like a nice little iced tea after some bubbling poison.
That's hilarious. Yep.
And I love Handmaid's Tale, but I was watching it thinking like, oh my god, like people really need me to shout at Arthur for another season in order for this to
it's
be like
dark.
It's so dark. But the other thing about me and Arthur on the show is that it's not the primary relationship. He's not the love of my life. Billy is on the show. And Billy is my, you know, Billy's the partner I have on the show where he's formidable, and I box my weight. And then it is a show about friendship, and romantic partners are there, and they're an important part of, you know, the main characters' lives. But it is, and again, I'll go back to the feminist agenda of it. It's just what men have been able to do for years, which is to sort of say like, well, I'm the lead and this is my partner, but she's not, you know, my conflicts with her are not going to be the center of the show, nor is she going to be the most like, you know, what's going on with Arthur in this episode. Like, we know what's going on with Arthur in this episode. Is Arthur going to forgive Julie? Of course he's going to forgive Julie, because he does have this unconditional love for her, and he has his own peccadilloes, and he's, you know, fun and wonderful, sort of quirky character to watch in his own right, but he is this sort of perpetually understanding character that's supportive and enables the lead to go off on these stupid adventures and harm herself over and over again and never really learn. So that, you know, combined with just something that I wanted to do based on my own real life at the time, I had a boyfriend who he was based on. I mean, he wasn't nearly as, like, you know, selfless or, you know, like, completely like he had his own thing, obviously, but I just thought it'd be a fun sitcom trope to show somebody in that role with a female lead.
Mm-hmm. But by having the Julie Arthur relationship, it robs us of seeing her in the dating scene.
Yes.
Which would be a whole show in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
When you were conceiving the show, was that an issue for you? Were you thinking of all of the storyline possibilities you're throwing out the window?
Yeah, absolutely I was. I mean, I knew that Billy would be single. You know, in season 3 he gets his first boyfriend. But we had some dating stories available to us by way of Billy, and that was also important for me to show a gay man dating and not have it be, you know, stereotypical, that we could do things that people hadn't seen before and also have the gay man be the lead in that sort of romantic way. But yeah, it absolutely was a decision that I made that had to do with my position in life, but also I think it informed my character being cranky in a specific way. In a, is that all there is? Like, yeah, I have a boyfriend, but I'm still not happy. So, it you know, I think that there's a certain quality to my character that even if she did have what she wants, will she ever be happy?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a certain domesticity to it that I think informed her worldview. And also, it was nice to have her... You know, the contrast between Billy being single, having this, like, shitty little apartment we don't usually see a lot, and my sort of coming from this, like, home life, and you do hang out in my apartment a lot, and Arthur cooks, and I think that that was an important contrast to show how where our characters are coming from.
So, quick season 3 detour. You mentioned mm-hmm. the love interest, John Cho.
Yes.
So, this is more than just a one-episode thing. This is a serious boyfriend for Billy.
Yes.
Can you tease a little bit about how that affects sort of the season?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we get to see Billy embark upon these rites of passage that he's never experienced before because John Cho plays his first, you know, real serious boyfriend, adult relationship. And so we get to watch Billy struggle with the, you know, the first sleepover and the going to a work event with your partner and, a lot of other stuff that's really uncomfortable and awkward. And Billy and Julie are characters who, you know, fundamentally don't like anybody in the world except for each other. And whenever you're introducing somebody new to that kind of, you know, exclusive club of two, there's going to be some tension around it. But as in the case of Arthur, there's a way to have a romantic relationship and have it exist harmoniously with the love of your life, which in this case is the best friendship that's the heart of the show.
Yeah.
So I was sure to not write any competition between me and John Cho's character. You know, I think that that's like kind of a nasty stereotype that hurts gay people in the big picture of like just girls being catty about like, oh, now he has a boyfriend and I'm not necessarily like, I don't think that's a healthy relationship to show. Certainly not one in which you want to still love these characters.
Mm.
Plus, if you really do love someone, and in the case of my best friend, Nate, who I've known since college, and I draw a lot of personal experiences that I have had with Nate for my relationship with Billy on the show, you know, when he met his now husband, it was just like, I was just thrilled for him. There was absolutely no feeling of, oh, now I'm going to be left out, or who is this guy really? It's like, if you love someone, they're your family, and you really want them to be happy. And I know that that sounds maybe cornier or more sentimental than you'd think from, you know, someone who writes this show about sort of cranky, nasty things,
yeah.
But, you know, the love between a woman and her gay best friend is something I feel is very sacred. And I really wanted to make sure that that came through.
Is the show over when Julie and Billy find professional success?
Of course not, because there's no such thing as permanent professional success. And also, you know, as I mentioned with the Arthur thing, it's like every time you get what you think you want, there's always going to be, if you're not a happy person or you insist on blaming the world around you for things that you're not happy about, then you'll never be satisfied. So
mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, one of the wonderful things about television is you have these characters you know and love, and they don't really change. The circumstances around them may, but people like television because they always reset to the way they were. Even if they learn something over the course of the episode, by the beginning of the next one, they're, you know, the same characters you've grown to know and love. So whether or not that means Billy and Julie are, you know, have a multi-picture deal and they're living in Bel Air, I think that they're always going to be miserable until they change who they are fundamentally, which nobody wants to see.
Season 2 episode, Julie and Billy go to New Jersey.
Yes.
And as someone who grew up in New Jersey, as someone who has family and friends in New Jersey, I just want to say that caricatures are spot on.
They were broad. They were offensive. They were completely accurate.
That was my favorite episode of season 2.
It's my favorite too. Thank you. Italian Pinata and Patches are my two favorite episodes from season 2.
And talk to me about, what is your relationship with New Jersey like? What fueled that?
Well, I will also say that's the first script that I wrote. You know, we got together, we had a writer's room for a couple weeks where we just, you know, brainstormed. Tom Sharpling was in the room. He's from New Jersey. And that was just sort of in, that kind of came up as like a really fun idea that we got so excited about that was just the first script that came out, and it came out so easily. And I remember we were all talking about, it was the New York, New York thing where the idea that like Italian people think it's a Frank Sinatra song, yeah, but gay people think it's a Liza Minnelli song, or no, it's a Liza Minnelli song. So that was when we discovered that would be how we would be revealed as Billy not being, you know, recently out and me not really being Italian.
It was brilliant.
It was so fun. Thank you. It was like one of these moments where get so excited. And then once we knew that there'd be like, you know, costumes, it was like, this is actually really fun. This isn't just like satisfying and hard work paying off and really smart, and this is fun. Like, we're just having, you know, this is like we get to put on wigs and be goofy, and it was so easy. And I got to get my friends to do it, Jamie Denbo and Jessica Chaffin, who play Rana and Beverly. They have like the world's funniest podcast, and that was so great. But I think it was also, you know, we as always, we try to come from a place of truth that's reasonably grounded before we go into crazy town and I start wearing wigs on top of wigs, which is the conflict of, you know, we started out with that episode, which is Julie doesn't have any female friends, and Billy is feeling like every year on coming out day, he's more invisible as a gay man who is aging and as a gay man who is not, you know, fresh to the scene in the way that there is a thing where men who recently came out, even if they're in their 40s or 50s, like there's a certain appeal to those guys because they're new. And so we wanted to comment on that and play on that. So him being able to live that double life and me being able to live my life, my lie as an Italian girl, because I suddenly have these female friends, are both very silly situations, but they definitely came from a place of, you know, grounded, realistic truth, I think.
And Billy got to make out with Mark Consuelos.
I know, and not all of us have had that opportunity, just that that Minx Kelly Ripa. But yeah, that was very exciting.
How did that
casting
come about?
It was just casting. We were like, who's going to play this hot dude? And we're just like, how about Mark Consuelos? And he said yes, and we were delighted. He was so funny. He was so into it.
Yeah.
He's just the best. I mean, he was great. And he kept showing me pictures of, he was taking pictures of me and my wig. He's like, I'm going to send this to my wife because her hair looked like that in the 80s. I'm like, I've seen soap operas. I know.
So yeah, that I feel like is your Emmy episode.
Thank
if there
you.
Is a such
I,
thing. Yeah.
I'm very proud of it. I really, that was one where I was happy from like top to bottom. Like there was, I was just like, oh, this is not only exactly how I pictured it, but it's like, it's even better.
The purse is dropping off the truck at the end.
Thank you.
Brilliant last
Thank
shot.
Thank you. That's
the whole thing.
Pinata. Thank you.
Yep. So before we go, because we're wrapping up here, you know, TV Line, we're all about scoop. And since I can't get you to confirm that Amy Poehler is going to be a guest star, can you throw me something that you can confirm?
Well, Stocker Channing is going to play Andrea Martin's sister.
I already saw that.
And Bonnie.
That's already out there.
Okay. Well, John Turturro is going to be in it too.
Okay.
He's going to play Marilyn's former lover,
all right,
who is a sort of still living like his hippie freewheeling lifestyle, very contrasted to Andrea's.
Okay.
Who else can I tell you is appearing on the show? We have amazing guest stars. I will tell you that they are very surprising and very exciting. Scoop. There's a lot more singing and dancing than you would expect on the show.
Can you tell me the thing that you told me when I first walked in?
What's that? Oh, about LA? We are shooting...
That's pretty big.
We have I will put it this way. We are shooting 2 days in LA next week. So, however that...
Billy and Julie in LA.
However that... I neither confirm nor deny that Billy and Julie will be in LA, nor that that will be a story, but I will say that we are going to... The production will be shooting for 2 days in Los Angeles. So that will amount to possibly something very exciting.
Awesome, I'll take it. That's a big scoop.
Great.
Thank you.
And there are some exciting wigs, too, that you'll be able to see. And some homages to movies that... God, we have a lot of... I mean, we're a very pop culture literate show, so we have homages in this season to adaptation, Being John Malkovich, Fargo. We have some reference to... oh, God, we did this big Lebowski thing yesterday that's pretty amazing that people are going to be excited about. A lot of Sondheim, like, references to live musicals. We have a lot of, it's a lot of stuff that's, like, not appealing to everybody, but the people who it appeals to are going to, like, shit their pants. They're going to be so happy. I promise.
And you're not lightening up on Kevin Spacey at all, are you?
Kevin Spacey is as essential of a part in Difficult People as Billy and Julie. I feel like he is... You know how, like, New York City was, like, the fifth girl?
Yes.
Yeah. I think Kevin Spacey is the number one girl on our show. We'd be foolish not to acknowledge his importance to the universe, the difficult-averse.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you so much for having me.
This was awesome.